Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We are asking you to call in, to listen in, or just relax and listen to our guests share valuable information through their experiences and expertise in areas of need and resolutions. We have on with us once again from the Netherlands, Dan Van Veen and Marika Schoen-Gels. And we also, and they are co-authors for a fascinating book they will be talking about today. I have also invited to come on the show with us is Carla Homburg, who is a teacher. And Carla and I met years ago as social workers. We worked for the State Department of Social Services. And unfortunately, we went our separate ways, and Carla became a teacher and I still a social worker, advocating for the incarcerated population. But I'd like to have each of them tell a little bit about themselves so the audience can know something about them, and then we will get the show going. So, Marika, do you want to start?
Yeah, thank you. I'd love to. Thank you very much. Yeah, my name is Marika Schoen-Gels. That's how it's pronounced in Dutch. It's quite a name to pronounce, I guess, in English, but you're doing very, very well, Leona. Thank you for that. I am the co-author of a book that's called Unknown Diary in Detention, and this is a book that I wrote together with Dave, who will introduce himself after me, I guess. And this book is actually the reason that we came on to the show last week, and I really appreciated the fact that people were calling in and asking questions to us about all sorts of things that we were talking about. That was really fun. And I really feel that this is a show in which you can, exchange some experiences, both from being in prison, as from being out of prison, as from the differences between the Netherlands and America, and not to be to talk about what's good or bad, but just about exchanging our experiences. That really makes this a very valuable show to be on, and I'm really thankful that you invited us back again. And I'm a mother of two daughters. My husband recently died, but that's maybe because that's why I said I'm married. That was very confrontation. That was a confrontation I just got. In my heart, I'm still married. And I'm a mother of two twin girls of 12 years old.
I want to thank you, Marika, and I'm sorry to hear about your husband. I wasn't aware of that the last time. You may have mentioned it, but I didn't. And I want to thank you for spending that time that you have to come on the show with Dave so that we can learn more about you. Dave, you want to also introduce yourself, please.
Hi, Leona. Thank you for having us again in the show. It's really great. I really enjoy talking about the things and experiences we had in the past. We indeed are the authors of our own book. It's called Unknown. Marika and I found each other a few months ago. Our relation isn't that long yet, but we kind of get acquainted together really quick, really fast. I think that's the special thing. If you start working together and you talk about life stories and life events and everything, you get really acquainted with each other. Mm-hmm. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm 44 years old. Next month I'll be 45. I have three beautiful children. I'm 21 till 8. I spend a lot of time with them. I really enjoy having my family time, and since I learned to be traditional, I refound God again and Jesus, I'm really, really happy, and I think that's a big part of my life now as it is, and that's what I really enjoy, and that makes it kind of simple for me to do what I need to do and to stay humble, to believe that love is the universal language which we need, and how we start to talk with each other. So thank you, Leona, for being here again.
I want to thank you as well.
Yeah.
I want to once again, before I introduce Carla, I want to once again thank you, Marika, and also Dave, because we have learned so much about a lot about the Netherlands and about that part of the world and the differences in the way things are done in your country compared to this country. So it's been an honor, and so many people have been so interested in hearing about people coming on from the Netherlands, as is with Franz Dow and also with Mariam Jacobs. So we're going to hear more from Dave and Marika, but what I'd like to do now is introduce a very good friend of mine. We once did social work together for the Massachusetts Department of Social Services. We were both social workers. Carla and I went our different ways. She became a teacher and I a social worker. So I'd like to introduce a very good friend, again, Carla Homburg, and she is from the United States, originally from the Netherlands. So Carla, would you like to introduce yourself, please, to the audience?
Absolutely. Hello, everybody. And Dave, I like what you said at the very end about the importance of love and how we have to think that way much more. It's a pretty crazy world out there now. Anyway, I originally was from Middelburg, Holland. I was born there and stayed there until I was 6 and a half. My parents had gone through World War II. My father went underground. He refused to work for the German camps. And because of that, he did that, we were able to move up the ladder a little bit to get to America sooner. So it was like 3 months, and my understanding, we were packed and ready to go. And one of the things I always say is, don't give me a cruise ship because I won't go on it. I went on that boat it was 11. We had a big storm, and thank goodness I was as young as I was. I got through it, and then we had to take a train to Colorado because that's where our sponsors were. It's quite a process. It really is. I mean, I didn't understand it at the time, obviously, but I do now. And then, anyway, so I started, after I finished all my schooling, I ended up getting a PhD in psychology, which I'm very grateful for. And so I teach at a university as a professor, and I have taught at several different universities. Now that I'm older, I don't teach quite as much. But I came over with a family of, there was four of us, and it's just me left now. Besides, I have one daughter who's going to be 50 on Halloween, and it's amazing. I didn't think I would ever see that. But, you know, it's really nice to meet you both. And, you know, I can speak Dutch. Now, don't ask me to do a conversation in politics because I can't do that. But anyway, I can speak it.
Carla, can you speak in Dutch? The population of students that you have, are they adolescents? Are they adults? Are they children? Marika was asking. She thought maybe it might have been the younger generation, but I thought you mentioned once before that you are teaching an older population.
Yeah, I'm teaching graduate students, and they are anywhere. They can be from 21 to 70-something, you know. I don't teach the – when I first started, I taught undergraduate work, but now it's graduate, which is nice because I get paid a little bit more. And I just like it. And I do it online, and I don't know if either one of you are interested in that, but you could do it with a – you know, a university there. Anyway, it's just a thought. So anyway, my journey has, I have lived in many states. I grew up in Richmond, New Jersey, then went to Cape Cod, raised my daughter there, got married, raised my daughter there. And then I left and I moved to San Diego. And my sister was in San Diego at the time. And once we got there, we drove there with my parents. It turned out that she had colon cancer. And, you know, I spent a good 2.5 years with her, you know. I mean, she was sick on and off, but, you know, at the end, I was glad that I spent that time with her because it's so important. Communication, I think one of you mentioned that. Communication with one another is so important. I mean, I don't know. We don't, there's not enough emphasis in education regarding the younger population to learn more about communicating. That's the answer for it. I mean,
I think that's what's lacking in this country is appropriate communication. As Marika was saying before we started the show, she thinks it's good to network. It's good to connect with people around the country and around the world. And I really was impressed with Dave's story and also with Marika's story when they were on last time. So I don't know, Dave, if you want to start off in talking a little bit about your book. And oh, I was going to say, Marika, you said you were a police officer at one time, or you are now?
I have been a police officer for 12 years in the force. So then I was in uniform. I have been a police officer most of the time. I was in management positions, but now I am again back in the police force, but now as an advisor. So not in the police force itself anymore, but in an advising position. So it's temporary, but at the moment I'm really close to all the stuff that's going on in victims, and how do we treat victims, the rights that they have, and all those kind of things. So I'm really close to the police work again, and especially around victims and victimizing and victim blaming and those kind of things. But also in relation to how to connect victims with suspects, or not suspects, but the ones that have been in prison.
Restorative justice.
Ways of connecting with each other, not only punishing people right away, but also try to get a conversation going, because sometimes it's much more important to talk about it. And not a victim sometimes doesn't even want, just wants to have contact and wants to say what it has to say, what he or she has to say about what happened to him or her. So there are more ways to roam. That's what they say as a Dutch, I don't know if it's even American, but there are more ways to roam. That's a Dutch saying, in that it's not only about punishing someone that did that took a road that maybe wasn't the best road to take. But there are more ways to get to, considering and thinking about how to handle situations that, went on or came on in life. And that's actually what we describe a little bit also in the book. It's not this is the way and that's the only way. There are so many ways that you can walk and it depends totally on which environment you grow up and the people that are around you, the way you're acting, all those kind of things. So, yeah.
You know, I don't know if you personally met Maryam Jacobs, but she is the psychosocial therapist, but she says the same thing you do as far as, you know, she has Deeper Justice on Facebook. And she talks about going deeper in. She said not everything is just black and white. You know, like a lot of people think, there's a lot of things that need to be, like a doctor, diagnosed in to find out the causes behind it. And I say it all the time, in this country, and Carla, you can probably agree with me, this country is, we have a large population of mental illnesses and also addictions in the United States. Many getting addicted through medication from doctors, painkillers, and many doing drugs and alcohol to cover up a trauma that they might have experienced as children or teenagers or whatever. I don't know what
That's
your thoughts
true.
Are. Doing.
Yeah. Well, actually, I worked at a state for clients who were in the Department of Corrections, and then they were transferred to our center. And they stayed there for 6 months. And some of them definitely, in regards to what you're saying, there was mental illness issues. There was sleeping issues. There were all kinds of different mental health issues that they had. Yet, I don't say it right. I'm sorry. I get used to it. But I think, yeah, I have to tell you that what you said is so true. Because what I found in counseling, because I was a counselor for a long time, counseling these people, there was so much more behind the story mm-hmm. of what actually happened to them and how they got into the drugs or the booze or whatever. And it was, I remember I once had a client, and I will not divulge name, of course, and that person had a long-standing addiction problem. And anyway, once he got sober, he realized that he had killed somebody while driving under the influence. And he was doing everything he can to try to put his life back together. But it took time. And that's one thing that I really... One of the things that I think is a great asset to have is listening skills, because mm-hmm. that for me is very important. And I've been very fortunate to, I think, kind of have that naturally. And anyway, so I'll stop here. Let's hear from Dave.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because Dave spoke briefly on that in his situation. And Dave, I'd like to have you talk about what you were mentioning the last time. You spent some time, I don't know how long, I don't think it was very long, you mentioned incarcerated at one time, and some of the things that actually caused you to have some severe emotional issues at the time.
Yes, Leona, and I can really remember that. And that's the funny thing. It's the first time that I got into jail was in 1997. That's a very long time ago. I was just 18 years old, and Marieke, she read the prologue of our book last time, and in that prologue, it starts about my traumatic experience the first time in jail. And the funny thing is, Carla and Leona, for you both to know, is that the first time that I got into jail, there came a social worker, came to the jail, and it's called reclassering in the Netherlands. I don't know if you, you have the same in the United States. I don't know the name. It's the people that take care after.
What is it?
When the people get out of jail in the United States, they probation officer. That's the name that I was looking for. It's probation officer. So the probation officer came the first time to my cell in my jail, and she asked. It was a she, and she asked what was going on and what was going on in my life. And she listened, but she didn't do anything with the news that I told her and with my story, my lifetime story and what happened at home and all the things that happened to me. And exact 11 years after my first time in jail, I got into jail for the second time. And it was almost the same. It wasn't a misdemeanor. It was something heavy. I explained
felony.
It was a heavy felony. So, and
hello,
did we lose him?
Dave,
can you hear me?
Okay, yeah. We can hear you now.
Yeah. So when the probation officer came for the second time, it was a different probation officer, of course. And the second time, I again explained my whole lifetime, my whole life story, and whatever happened and what happened in my childhood and everything else that need to be told to the lady of the probation officer. And after a month being in jail, she came back to me and she said, Dave, we owe you an excuse. And I didn't understand why she said that to me. Why did you owe me an excuse? I did something wrong. I'm sitting here waiting for my case to be going to court. And she explained to me that she looked at my life story and she took my lifetime of my life story, excuse me, my life story in 1997, and she put that exactly next to my same story that I told them in 2008. And that's 11 years later. And she saw that it was exactly the same. So that's when she realized, and the probation officers, they realized that I didn't lie the first time to get out of jail. I was telling them the truth, and I was seeking for help, but nobody listened to me, to my cry for help. So it was really, that was really difficult for me to cope with. And especially because you go back to your cell and you're sitting there on your bed all by yourself. You can't call anybody. You don't have someone that you trust or that you love that you can reach out to. So you have to contemplate about the information they just gave you with an excuse that they didn't listen 11 years ago. And they found out that I was just telling the truth. And I asked them, why should I lie about those kind of things? And then I got the explanation that a lot of people that are inside always try to do all sorts of things to get out of jail. And I said, yes, I understand that, but I was just being honest. I was just trying to explain to you people how I got into this situation. So I think that's really important, especially because Carla said it and Marika said, and we all say that, that it's about the communication. And even though we did, and I did bad things in my past, I'm not doing if I'm a holy person or something like that. I really did ugly things and I did bad things. And I'm not looking for an excuse why I did it, but it happened. And I was trying to make amends with everything by telling the truth so I could be helped or somebody knows what to do with it. So, and that's also the start why I got into a forensic, that I got the possibility to start a forensic project. It's a forensic, and I don't know if Franz ever told about the forensic psychiatry inside the show Leona, but that was where I first got a real chance to investigate what was my problems and what happened in my past, and I could talk with psychiatrists and psychologists to make amends what happened in the past so I could start to build a life again. Because now I was just in survival mode, and I've been in survival mode from the moment I was born, in the family where I was born at. It was always only about survival, not being myself. I could never be myself. So it was a very lonesome road. And for me, prison was a place to get to rest where I can... Yeah, where I can look at myself and where I can contemplate about the things that happened. And that's also the origin of the book that I wrote together with Marika. That was the origin because I was just curious. I needed to write it off me, and it was perfect there because I had a lot of time inside myself. So
I want to hear more. I want to hear more about the book, but you know what you just said, Dave? I've heard this from so many others, including my own loved one. When they hold things in all those years, you hold these things in, and when you finally let it out, you know, the person that you're letting it out to, you want to have them acknowledge it. You know, not like you said, she thought that you were just trying to get out of prison, so she never did anything with it, and you were left there in your cell to sit there and think about, you know, just letting all this out, finally letting it out, and no one was hearing at the time until 11 years later. And this is painful because so many people, they don't want to talk about their past. You know, they try to just move on as though it never happened. But when they finally are able to, someone is actually seeming to be interested and they finally let it all out only to be, you know, okay, goodbye, I'll talk to you later. I can imagine what you were going through at that time. And I hope that you really do express that in your book because so many people need to know when they open up for the first time in many years about their traumas, you know, their painful moments, they want somebody to actually acknowledge it and hear it and understand what they're going through instead of just walking away and leaving them void after disclosing all those years of pain.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you described it exactly right, Leona. It felt like I was looking for people with empathy, and the only thing I got was sympathy from people. And I wasn't looking for sympathy. I was looking for empathy, for people to understand what I was going through as a human being. Because that's the experience that we are having when we are here. It's a human experience that we are going through, in my belief.
Right. Can I ask you, Dave, what happened the second time when you said they realized that you had a pattern? You did the exact same thing. Did you end up staying another 11 years or?
No, the second time, Carla, was I sat inside the jail for like 6 months and I was brought to court and there wasn't enough evidence. So they dismissed the case, but my life was totally destroyed. I lost financially. I got destroyed, lost my job, and I was planning to promote in the job. So I lost practically everything in 2008.
Yes.
So it was really, really hard to. I can tell you that for 10 years I'm in a healthy relationship and I don't drink anymore and I don't do anything bad anymore. But I can tell you the aftermath of that 6 months in prison in 2008, the aftermath took, well, I can say that still till this day on, I can feel what happened in 2008. And especially, that's what I tried to tell Leona the last time. Even though the prisons are really bad in the United States, and it seems that the prisons here are a bit better, but still, when you get out of prison in the Netherlands, society will not hire you. They will not give you insurances. You can't insurance your car. You can't find a job. You can't go start for your own because you can't get your papers that you need. Yeah, so even though I got 6 months in prison time, they gave me more than 10 years sentence in society. And still till this day on, when me and my sweet wife, Kim, we set up a company that helps the guys that are incarcerated and they need a job and they get out or they need somewhere to live. I help them get a job and also have a room where they can live so they can start their new life. And I arrange jobs for them and I make contact with the employers so they know what's going on. And I revisit them constantly. So it's not like I drop somebody and then I come back or I don't come back. So I put a lot of craft in it and a lot of love in it. Still, when I go to a city hall or with the government, or they always say, Dave, we really love the job that you do. We really love the work you're doing, and you're doing a great job, but we can't hire you because you have a past. You have a criminal past, or you've been... So it's really, really hard to be acknowledged as a human being after you've been to prison for several times in the Netherlands.
Yeah, it's not only even in this country. After someone gets out, they have the same problems, you know, reintegrating into society. But and it's true, there are a lot of bad people in prison. But society stereotypes, and because of the stereotypical views, everybody that goes to prison, whether it be for 5 months or 50 years or life, you know, it's the same. So many people have died on the death penalty, only to find out later that they were innocent. I just learned the Department of Justice is finally going to be looking at abolishing the death penalty because of these issues. But it's heartbreaking because we all make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is heartbreaking, Leona. Even when I always advocate for America is only one of the last countries that have the death sentence. And then sometimes when you're on a birthday or when you're somewhere and the conversation steers to people who have been to jail or it steers to death sentences, and I always speak out and I always say, like, how can we make it right to take other humans' life? And then immediately they say, yeah, but they do that too. Who are they? And I think they should bring it back to Europe also. And I go, like, wow, where does this animosity come from? Where does this hate come from? Because,
right.
it's really strange, and especially because especially in America, it's known all over the world that so many people who are on death row are innocent.
Yes.
So it's not like one in a million is innocent. No, there's such a high percentage of innocent people in prison, and especially in the United States, because this is a totally different thing. I really like Dave Chappelle. And Dave Chappelle, the famous comedian, I really like him. And he said, like, it was about R. Kelly, what he did to this 15-year-old girl. And then the whole world thought something about this 15-year-old girl and that he did something to her. And then Dave Chappelle said, but when I mention that a 15-year-old boy, got a life sentence because he accidentally killed his neighbor while wrestling, because he was doing some wrestling moves together with his neighbor, and his neighbor accidentally died. But the 15-year-old boy, was sentenced as an adult because he took somebody's life in an accident. And I thought, oh my God, then you're 15 years old and you are trialed as an adult for the rest of your life because of an accident. Well, that really got me in my heart. I was thinking, like, how? How can you go to bed at night or look in the mirror and go to sleep?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My grandfather was he ran one of the, it was a jail in Middleburg. You know, there were a lot of them who would end up killing themselves through hanging or whatever. But anyway, he did that work for many, many years. And I'm sure it was tough on him, you know. But that's what he chose. And I'm sure I like to think anyway that he helped some of them. You know, he talked to them. Anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Well, you know, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did, Carla, because that brings me right back to Franz Dell. Franz was a warden for 27 years. That's how, I guess, Dave, that's how you and Franz Dell met.
And
Franz Dell, I mean, he works with the United Nations. He's with the Ministry of Psychiatry. He and Dave were, he said, when he first told me about Dave, he said, one of his very, very good friends, you know, and he even said he met your wife, Kim, or your fiance, but
yeah.
Franz Dell and Carla, you just mentioned your father. And I think that's what's needed in these prisons in the United States, people overseeing, either some call them the warden, some call them commissioners, but they need to be exactly the same way. They need to interact to know the type of people that they have in their prisons that they're overseeing. And they need to protect these people while inside too.
Yeah. I agree.
Everybody's been talking about the Netherlands and Norway and all these. That Norway is the role model for all prisons throughout the world. But they talk about the Netherlands and all those countries out there because they have success. Their success rate is unbelievable. So there have been people actually going to the Netherlands, you know, that have actually been going to Norway to find out why such successes. But the thing is, I'm hoping, and maybe this is why the Department of Justice is finally looking at six major reforms in criminal justice, because they're seeing success over in those countries. Whereas we have mass incarceration, the only country in the world with mass incarceration like this. We even talk to China. So this is good that they're hearing from, you know, people like yourselves over in those countries. And they're seeing exactly why you're successful in what you do. You know, I couldn't understand Carla. When I first met Carla, she had such a beautiful personality. She was always joking and laughing, even to this day at her darkest moments, her painful moments. She's always cracking a joke or something. But I've never met people like that. And I've even met people that come directly from Ireland who have a total better attitude and characteristics than those people that are Irish living right in this country. So it's almost like sometimes I wish I could just go to the countries and live.
Well, Leona, Yeah, I always use the joke with my English friends or with my American friends. I don't know if I can say it online.
It's not bad.
I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. It's in English. It has to be said in English because in Dutch it doesn't sound right. And in English it said, when they said, because Dutch people have their own kind of moving around in the world. And then I always said, I can understand that because as finishing Dutch, God created the Dutch.
Good day.
And I thought about it. I'm sorry. Because Leona, you said that Carla always is uplifting since the day you met her, and it's a funny thing because, what is the age that you moved to the United States, Carla?
I was 6.5 years old.
Carla, you still remember how to speak Dutch fluently, and you've been here for you. You want to say it? Should I?
No, Kathy, not now. That is correct. Yeah, no, please. I'm on the phone. Excuse me, it's my grandson. I kind of hold on spot.
Dat verleer je nooit, Carla.
Zeg, laat me rekenen.
Dat je dat nooit verleert. Je blijft altijd je moederstaal kunnen spreken.
Ja, ja, dat is waar hoor. Want we gingen naar school en ik was misschien in eerste klas of kindergarten, ik weet het niet, but anyway. That is how, by going to school, is how I learned the English language. Yeah. You know, and when we went home, my parents always talked Dutch, mm-hmm. So that is why ik kan het nog spreken. And ik heb ook twee, ik heb andere cousins, or I don't know what you call them in Holland.
Neven en nichten.
Ja.
Ja,
neven en nichten.
En nicht, dat is waar. Dank je.
I think that's what people, when people move to this country or they've been in the country for years, a lot of times they don't keep the language fluent in their families, and the kids forget, or they never learn their own languages. So, Carla, you're doing good.
Thank you, Leona.
Let me ask you, does your daughter, does she speak Dutch too?
No. She'll know a couple of words and a couple of, she knows Sinterklaas Kapoentje. Anyway. No, because at that time, at that point in my life, I just spoke English. I think at my parents' house at that time, I still spoke English too. We didn't really go back to this. But my nichtjes, die komen wel misschien, soms komt één, die komt iedere 2 jaren, voor 3 jaren. Mijn andere, die kwam misschien ieder 4 jaren of zo. En dan ik ga ook daar. En dat heb ik gedaan. En dat was leuk. En als ik daar ben, dan moet ik heel Holland. Ik kan zien hoe mijn cousins, mijn nichtjes, interact. Uh-huh. En we spreken Engels en Hollands.
Ja.
Als ik daar ben. Wat hoor. Ja. That's another experience I've had. You know, it's funny because most people, I just have to say this, you know, you have one place and you grew up in that one place, and then, you know, you might move to another house and you're there for years and years and years, you know. And some of the people that are in prison don't have that stability. No. They don't have that. You know, it's very up and down, and which is unfortunate because if you have that, that helps. I had it through my teenage, all the way through my teenage years until I graduated high school, and then I started moving. And the reason I thank my father for that, because I kept moving. I have lived in so many states, and my daughter and I, and my father he was a traveler. He just traveled, you know. He finally said to my mother that, you know, they're buying a camper. They can travel around the United States, and as soon as he could get his Social Security, he was on it. So they could travel, and they traveled all over America. Then they went to Portland, to not Portland, Portuguese. I don't know. They went a bunch of places, but anyway, so that was instilled in me. It's like okay to get up and move, and it still felt safe, where maybe the person who was in prison, once they moved, felt very unsafe because they didn't have that stability. So, I mean, there are many people that go from house to house to house to house when they're young, you know, and it's hard. But can I tell you, Bill, I think it's awesome, really awesome what you're doing, you know, and how you're trying to get it out there more and that people understand that you, and just as, I think as you said, is a Dave, so you know, it's a, there are a lot of different things of why a person may end up in prison and why they don't. Or, I mean, it's ridiculous here in America, like those four boys, you know, because they were black. They've spent 18 years in prison, and then they finally realized somebody else did it.
Wow.
And they finally got out. I don't know if you ever heard of it before. Yeah, I can't think of it. There's a movie about it.
Yeah, I saw it.
Well, did you see it? Okay.
Yeah. It was a famous case, and I think that was one of the first cases that the whole world woke up to the fact that there's a lot of discrimination in the United States because the kids were, just because they were black, they were sentenced and they didn't do anything. I really felt to cry when I saw that movie. I really had to cry just for the fact that they got discriminated, because it doesn't matter which color that you have. If you're being discriminated, you can feel that and you can see when it happens. And it's heartbreaking. It's just heartbreaking that things like this happen. Because it makes me feel like we're living in the mid-ages, that we didn't evolve or anything. Yeah. It's so strange to see that and to feel it. It's heartbreaking. That's what it is.
The worst is in the United States. But you were talking about prisoners, you know, having all different reasons for people being in prison. I just got a call. He's on the phone now, and he's a prisoner incarcerated in Pennsylvania. This young man, well, he's not young anymore. He's in his 50s. But he lost his father to suicide. He lost his only brother, his only sibling, to suicide. And his mother was living in North Carolina, had her own home. And she died of cancer. I'll let Samson. Can you hear us? Do you want to explain to the audience and also to our guest from the Netherlands what you went through in ending up in prison as a result?
All right. Well, first of all, greetings and salutations to all you guys on that side of the big pond.
This is Kelly. Kelly Donahue.
Well, I go by Samson. I hate being called that. So, very honest, she said that's correct. You know what happened to my brother and my father and my mother. And I started started out at a very young age. I was 15 years old, the first time I ever got locked up, and it was actually for something that I didn't do. It was an accessory to breaking and entering. And the police talked to a friend of mine, and they thought did it, and he didn't. He told him I had done it. It wasn't me, it was somebody else. And because I was the only one stupid enough to say, hey, this is what really happened, I got incarcerated for that. And that was So this was in North Carolina. I'm currently, like she said, Pennsylvania. So now fast forward a few years, 2002, my dad he'd been passed away for like 4 years at the time. I lost him, my grandmother, and my aunt, like all in one shot, like went back to back year up here. I came back up here from North Carolina to be with them. So I got to the point where I was getting depressed. I was always angry. And I'm Irish, so we solve everything with drinking. We get drunk and we start fighting. That's how we relieve,
hey, these,
relieve all our anger.
These people, Samson, these people are from the Netherlands, and even Carla, she's from North Carolina, but she's also Dutch. And they know what it is to get mad and get to drink. And Irish are not the only ones that drink. Believe me, I had a problem at one time, too. But I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Carla, you said go ahead.
I just want to say good for you for, you know, trying to have them understand it wasn't you, and then you had to take the what they gave you, which was obviously very unfair, you know, but, you know, you talk about
it. This is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
So he was talking about the drinking. Okay, go ahead, Samson. Continue.
Yeah, well, anyhow, that was pretty much the self-medicated go-to coping mechanism, you know, that between that and fighting, whatever. If you couldn't solve it with that, it couldn't be solved, right? Well, anyhow, I ended up getting tangled up with the wrong kind of people, and by the wrong kind of people, I mean that they weren't exactly who they portrayed themselves to be. So I was having an affair with this girl and a woman. She was 5 years older than me, and it turns out that she ended up marrying my cousin. Well, our affair never did stop. And, we got in an argument one night, and then she decided that she was going to leave her husband and wanted me to go with her, trying to say that, you know, she was pregnant with my kid. And if she was, you know, I would have claimed the kid and all that, but, you know, I just didn't believe what she was saying because that's one of the things that she did, you know. She would lie and manipulate to get you to do whatever, you know, she wanted you to do. Well, anything, one thing led to another, and the next thing I know, I'm sitting in county jail because she said that I'd raped her. There was no way for me to prove that I hadn't because I've been having sexual relationships with her. And come to find out that this is her coping mechanism for doing things whenever she gets caught. That was like the third time that she'd actually said that this had happened to him. One guy tried to kill himself, and another guy supposedly was the father of her youngest daughter or something. And that's how she explained it to her husband. And, you know, she had been forced. But anyhow. So fast forward here, 21 years later, I'm still in prison. And like she said, all these things had happened, you know, while I was incarcerated. And I've tried to turn my leaf over. You know, I don't drink anymore. I even quit smoking. You know, I don't do any kind of drugs, recreational or otherwise.
This is a call from Pennsylvania State Correctional Institution, Brackville.
This call is subject to recording and monitoring.
I exercise on a regular basis, you know. Just doing the normal things that people are supposed to do, try to get into a routine. So I've got, like she said, I have my mom's house down there, but parole doesn't want to let me parole down there to the place. So it's sitting there rotting into the ground. And end up, if I haven't already lost that, I'm going to end up losing that. And my kids, they're estranged. I haven't seen my two youngest since they were 2 and 3, and they're 23 and 24 now. And my oldest boy, he was 7, almost 8 last time I seen him, and he's 31 now. And my nephews and my nieces, they don't know who I am. So, you know, that's what prison has done to me. It pretty much just alienated me from society, from my family. And, you know, and now I'm back to, you know, what do I do? So do I bother caring and trying to go out there and doing the right thing, even though they don't want to let me go? Or, you know, to say, you know, the hell with it. Just give up. So that's where I'm at.
The sad situation with this case is that Kelly got out of prison about, what, 7 years ago or 5 years ago?
Yeah, the first time I got out was in 2016.
And his mother had passed away. Her house was there. He's the only surviving family member. And he couldn't leave Pennsylvania to go to North Carolina to take care of business with his mom's house. So because of being, as you mentioned, Dave, coming out and not having, not being accepted by society, as you mentioned. And so he lost, well, he doesn't know if he lost the house, and that's why he called me, because I was going to, we had tried before to find out through the rural development place to find out what the status is with his mom's house, but he's most likely lost it by now because of not being able to leave the state once he got out. That's another problem I think we have in this country, is when somebody comes out of prison, they've served their time, they should be allowed to leave the state. But this is a problem he's had as well. So what happened is, as he mentioned the drinking, and that's what landed him back in prison. And now he's due to come out within the next year or so. He's been going for his parole hearing. But Samson, Dave was talking. Dave and Marique, the two that are on the line on the show, they wrote a book because Dave himself was incarcerated for a time, and he wrote a book about his life as well. So there's, and he was just talking about how people should not stereotype as well.
Yeah, I heard him saying something about it whenever I first came on, and that's just the way society is. We have our normal, what is supposed to be the norms of society, those that are the ones that are supposedly law-abiding citizens, and they're just supposed to lead by example, so on and so forth. We're finding out every day that they're the most corrupt ones that are out there. Then you have a subcategory of that, everybody that is not them, and then you have a subcategory of them, which is us, get incarcerated and so on. And when we get incarcerated, we have subcategories in here. Like we try to, you know, dividing themselves between races, like he was saying, and then you go by offenses. You got the ones that were the murderers are supposed to be at the top of the hierarchy, and then, you know, you got the child molester that's supposed to be at the bottom of the hierarchy and stuff like that. So that's a perfect example of, you know, divided we're divided. Together we stand, divided we fall. And, you know, people just don't have
good
clue. It's we the people, not we the government. And, you know, just like these union auto workers, look at what they're doing. They're standing together and they're getting things done. Could you imagine if the entire United States did that, or even just half the United States? You get done whatever you want to get done, you know? People don't have a clue.
You know, Kamala, when Samson was talking about the girl they had been having the affair, and she she accused him of rape after he wouldn't do what she wanted him to do. It reminded me of when we worked for the Department of Social Services. I had a case in Falmouth, and the girl's father was a police officer. Her mother was deceased, and he was raising his twin daughters alone. But she used to tell me all the time, whenever she would go out with a guy, if he didn't do what she wanted him to do, she would cry rape. But the thing is, her father caught on to it after a while. He told me one time himself, he knew his daughter. He knew what she was doing. But it goes to show you how people can end up in prison for things they didn't do, if accused of something that they didn't do.
The concern is 10% of the United States, but I think it's closer to 25 or 30% that are innocent. And then there's other ones where they do the crime that they were supposedly, like if it's a simple assault, they get for an aggravated assault. If it's harassment, they get for simple assault, so on and so forth. They exaggerate what the actual charge is.
Yeah,
that's the feeling, Leona, that I get every time when you see something from the United States. And I don't look at the normal media outlets, but I try to check YouTube or real-life cases or real-life programs. And then I almost every time I get this feeling, if this like a booming business model in the United States to get people in prison, and the higher rates of incarceration, they get subsidized. I don't know how it works, but it's a really terrible system, because the same with a bag of wheat, when you just have a bag of wheat, and I'm not advocating it's good to do drugs or anything, but still, when you're a child or when you're young, when you're 21 years old, you're still a child. You're not an adult. When you're 23 years old, you're still a child. You're not an adult. And when you get caught with a little bag of weed, you can get years of prison time just for a little bag of weed. And then I'm thinking, like, why? I don't understand the logic. Do you understand the logic, Marieke?
No, I don't understand that at all. No, because it doesn't. It gets a side effect which is not erased anymore.
Well, they just legalized marijuana in the United States, and unfortunately, it's no crime now, but the people that are already in for marijuana have not been released yet. And there's a lot of them that are serving long, long, harsh sentences, and they haven't been released yet, even though it's now legal in this country.
Yeah. Ain't that funny how they say something's illegal, lock you up for it, then turn around and make it legal so they can make money off of it. They're doing that with marijuana. They're doing that with gambling, and they're talking about doing it with prostitution.
Yeah.
My thinking. Yeah. Really.
Yeah.
The dollar works.
As Miriam Jacobs always says too, that these large corporations are profiting, and that's why they say prisons for profit. The large corporations are profiting off of the mass incarceration, and I'm sure the Department of Corrections also gets a portion of what the large corporations get by keeping people behind those prison walls.
Yeah, as long as the federal government keeps working over that money, the states are going to keep doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I can say about Trump. He was saying, you know, we're going to quit doing all that. He said, if you're not using that money like you're supposed to, because the recidivism rate is like a spinning top. So that's what your doors are like. You're going out and coming back in just as fast as you're going out. You're not doing something right. And 90% of that is parole itself. Because the stipulation on parole keeps bringing you back. Stuff that normally wouldn't get people locked up will bring you back. Even though you didn't commit a crime, you know, it's still a crime in the eyes of parole. And you can come back for years. I did that the first time for unsworn.
You have 1 minute left.
Unsworn falsification to authority, something I got probation for. Ended up doing 3.5 years on a parole violation. And now this year for changing the bad address without permission. I've been back for almost 4 years because of that.
Wow.
Those are times. I mean, we're speaking about 365 days in a year, and you've got only years. You're speaking in years. You're not even speaking in weeks or days or months. It's like years of your life.
Yeah.
I'm really
hang up my end here. I just want to go ahead and say my goodbyes and thank everybody for listening. I appreciate the therapy session. I need that every now and again.
Dave, you were just talking about that too. He opened up and now he's got to go. Dave was just talking about himself. The same thing happened in the past when he was.
Thank you for using Securus.
Bye bye, Samson.
Yeah, bye. Bye, Samson.
I feel, you know, Samson is like a son to me. You know, I've never met Samson personally, but I've been communicating with him for some time because I was doing national, you know, advocacy work. But I feel bad for him because he lost his brother, his father to suicide. Then he lost his mother to cancer. He has absolutely no one now to talk to. And so he calls sometimes just to talk about, you know, what's going on in his life. And it's sad because you can't help somebody like that because there's just the help is not out in the world today. People have gone, a lot of people have grown cold and careless, and they don't want to hear the voices of those. But, and you know, one of the things is, Dave and Marieke, I want to, the book that you have written, I do want to read it. And Carl, I was talking to Carla about it, and I said, you know, it hasn't been translated into English yet. And I hope that maybe you and Carla, you two and Carla can get together or talk sometime, and maybe even she can help in some way to get this book translated. But it needs to get to this country because your story, Dave, this book is going to open a lot of eyes, I'm sure.
Well, can I say something, Leona? Because I think there is a miscommunication because we have translated our book to English and we already checked the translation because I have a friend who lives in Iowa. Yes, I have a friend who lives in Iowa and he's an Englishman. He was born in London. No, well, to be honest, he was born in Israel. He moved at a young age to London. He lived almost for his full adult life. He lived in London and then he moved to Iowa and he still lives in Iowa now. So he is practically, Yeah. So, and he, I sent the book to him because Marika and I translated it ourselves. Yes, and we asked, his name is Aaron. He's a really dear friend of mine. And Aaron, I asked Aaron, he's a really busy guy. And I asked, could you help me with my book? And he said, Dave, I will help you. I will do everything for you to help you to get your story out and to give it to the world. So we sent the book to him, and then he sent a few things back, like, okay, Dave, I don't understand this one, I don't understand this. And then after a few weeks, we translated it completely, and then I asked Aaron, if I put it into an e-book at this moment, is it then ready for the American market? And then Aaron told us, Dave, you can publish it, and every American can read it, and it will be fine. So, but then... we sent it to Frans because Frans knows the penal system, and you also, Leona, knew the penal system. And a friend of you, I think it was Dolly, who started reading in it, and she said, yeah, I have some tips and tricks for the book that can be changed. And but we were hoping that Dolly would come back to it, but it's not that it's not translated. It is completely translated, and we are making, as we speak, there's an ebook in the making, and I think it's going to be next week that the ebook is going to be out. Am I right, Marika, that next week the book is going to be in ebook form?
Yes, you're completely right. At the moment, it's being transformed into EPUB. How is it called? EPUB. That's remember that now, Dave? Was it?
It's an ebook.
And I will put it on Amazon. So the moment that it's on Amazon, I will send you a message, Leona, in order to that you can maybe put some PR about the book that it's to be, you can be buy it on Amazon, and we will not publish it in paper version in the United States, because if we would do that and we would print it over here in the Netherlands, it would be the shipping costs would be double the worth of the book. So we didn't want to do that, and also because of the fact that needs also a lot of trees, and we love the trees, so maybe it's better to only present it in the ebook at the moment. So it's almost ready. And it will be published probably next week on Amazon.
Awesome. That's great, Marika.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. I know once Leona gets it, then I'll get it too. she'll send it to me so I can read it. I look forward to reading it.
It's like as if you are... especially the book that is about the diary that Dave wrote in his being incarcerated for 70 days. He wrote a diary, and it's about the diary and the way in to getting into prison and the way after getting out of prison. And actually, I have read his original diary. And the moment I got his diary, which was very personal, and I'm really grateful that I am the one that could read the original, because that was actually for me as if I was sitting next to him in his cell, feeling what he felt, experiencing the despair, and sometimes also the boring and the frustration and all kinds of feelings that you get when you're incarcerated and have all the time of your life to contemplate everything that happened to you. So it really made a heavenly impression on me as a person, and also impacted me very much in the way I looked at life in particular, but also at people's ways they take in life. And Frans Dao, the one that Leona is always talking about, actually read the book for us, and the first thing that we got back from him was that What he was very surprised about is that he thought the moment that he finished the book, he finished it in one day. It was like a page turner to him. And he said, it's like, I am like David and David like I am. So there is no difference between people. We are all the same, and we just,
yeah, it's very true. Yeah.
We're just taking different routes. And that's what life presents us. So that is actually what you can read in the book. It's a book that is not to be laid next to you as a novel that you're reading just because you like it, but it's something that goes deeper than that. So we really have this message in the book, and that's also the reason that we are kind of holding back that people that were official translators would translate the book, because it's also our Dutch culture and the way we say things that we wanted to show the world that this is a message that comes from the heart and not from the perfect language that it should be. It's like it's from your heart. And that is not to be, you cannot translate that as a person that did not feel it. So, yeah, we really hope that we can get this message into the world, because it's a heart message and a message about love and not about, prejudice and not about all the good and the bad and everything that's going on in everyone's life. It's about reflecting about your own life and how you lived your life until now, and be very happy that there is a now, actually.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Was that your colleague?
That's so true, Marika. Now I'm probably really saying your name wrong, but forgive me, please.
Oh, no problem. It's beautiful the way you say it.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, Marika.
I do too. She was saying everyone can call her Mary, but I said the name Marika is even prettier. I love that name.
You know, I just, the way you expressed that about the book and, you know, how you felt, you know, you could feel, you know, what Dave is going through. And that makes you a really empathic and compassionate person to be able to do that, really feel it. I think that, you know, the whole social work field needs to have those qualities. One of the classes I teach is social psychology and diversity. And we have lots of work on prejudice, biases, you know, things like that. And it's interesting how students will come up with, well, geez, my mother did that, my father did that, you know, my brother, whatever, and they picked it up, you know. It's just, it's really nice that you said it. I just wanted to tell you that.
You know what? I mentioned this to Marianne Jacobs as well, but Marika and Dave, what you could do, and I could send you the addresses to these law schools, these universities in the country here, and if you could send them a letter, maybe introducing yourself and also introducing your book, and offering to, you know, to come and meet with them and to do a lecture or something like that. These things might be good, because I'll tell you, I have law students, and I'm just terminating my organization, but I have I've had some law students who want so much to learn about the criminal justice area. They want to work with the incarcerated, and they want to do their internships. Some of them have, but these kind of things are very, very much needed in the schools. Real examples of the criminal justice in the unfortunate, ineffective rehabilitation and things like that. So that would be something that would be really awesome, to get those books into the universities, the law schools around the world. But primarily,
I have,
That's a dream. That's
a very
dream, actually.
And also sending it to the legislative members as well, sending it to the politicians that are working on criminal justice reform.
There aren't any. Sorry.
What was that?
There's no politicians here. There's no politicians in America. That's crazy. You know,
Carla, when you say that, I agree. When you think about it, look at, we have a former and a current president. One is corrupt, and they're trying to bring charges against him, and he seems to be ahead of them. And then you have the current one who's protecting his own son from going to prison. So you're right. We don't have politicians. We have people acting.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, but to be honest, Leona and Carla, for Marika and me, it would be a dream come true that we get the chance to advocate our life story and what we did with the book and the message we're trying to get out, and to let other people get acquainted with the universal language of love, because that's what also, every time we get people who read our book, they all say it was hope-giving, it was a page-turner, but also that love is the answer to all our problems. And we know it, and we talk about it, and we talk about it every day, and everybody does it that I meet now, but it would be such a good idea that if we can go to the universities and talk about the book we wrote, that would be a really nice thing, Marika, if we could do that, huh?
definitely. Yeah.
You know, I could send you the addresses of the universities and even addresses to the legislative members, and you could write one generic letter with all of their names and addresses, CC it, and then send it out to each one of them individually. The e-books as well, the e-books, mm-hmm. Those can get sent around. But one of the things is you could email the politicians. You can email the universities. I can send you their email addresses, and you can just email them and put the link to your website and let them know this is what we'd like to relay to you, so that you can maybe perhaps use it in working with your students or working with your aides to get this message out. That would be a cheaper way to do it, the cheapest way to do it, and it would also be able to be distributed to others as well.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Very good idea, Leona. Beautiful
idea.
I'm
going to send you the email addresses to the universities around the country, to the law department, and also to the legislative members. Send them a letter, email, and send them the link to where they can see your books, and let them know that you are interested. You'd be interested in speaking with them personally, and you know, even attending the universities for the lecture,
mm-hmm.
to speak with the students. You could do it right from the Netherlands.
Yeah, there is no distance anymore, huh? We are one world.
Well, I wouldn't mind getting a plane and move and going to the States. I've been there twice in the United States, and I really enjoyed it. So I wouldn't mind taking a plane.
and do me a favor, put that in that email when you send it out to them about your book. Let them know who you are. Let them know that you are the author, you and Marika, the co-authors of a book, The Unknown, and tell them a little bit about your experiences, and tell them that you wrote this book primarily for teaching purposes.
Yeah,
so that the law students would understand and would be able to, you know, gain some knowledge and experiences through that book.
That would be awesome.
Great idea, Leona. That's a great idea.
I will be sending you the email addresses, and you can send it out to all of them. And I'm going to tell you, too, I have a lot of media email addresses and also addresses. So I'm going to send you this information to the media around the country, too.
Well, bring it on.
Bring it on, Leona. Let the world know.
I'm telling you, what you two are doing is not only helping the people in your countries, it's helping the people around the world. And I know Massachusetts is one state that really needs to know about this, and also other states in this country. This country, they have to do something. And even now, the United States Department of Justice is saying it. There's too many people incarcerated, and we need to do something about it. So hopefully they're learning from people like yourselves, other countries that are talking about the need for reform and talking about the experience that everyone's had. But your book, like you say, sometimes some of these things happen in your countries as well, but you don't have mass incarceration, and that's the good thing. So
the book is also very interesting for people that are incarcerated, just to be inspiring for them to see that it can also be some kind of inspiration for people, that just like the person that Samson, Samson, the name of you, the one you were.
Kelly Donahue. He goes by Samson.
Yeah. So also for him, just to read that he's not alone. It's like you're not alone. You're not alone, and it's very good to talk and to have someone that can listen to you, just like he was actually telling us. Thank you for the therapy. It's like, if you can even be so grateful for such a small thing, actually, it's bigger than one might think, that we maybe might think that it's much more worth for them to simply be seen and be heard and be felt in the way they are experiencing the life behind bars, because that's something that you, when you are outside of and free in the world, and you're just walking around just like a bird flying in the sky, I don't think we can, at least I cannot imagine the way it must be. So I think it's very good to simply become get more in contact with each other, just to know each other's world and connect. That's the only thing that can help, I guess.
Samson did say, Samson, sorry, Leona, the most important thing I heard Samson say, that the unions do it too. If we all stand together, we can change the world. And I think a really important thing I want to tell Leona is something happened with me when my book came out, and Marika and I were together, and we sent it out, and it was in Dutch. We get all this positive feedback on our book, and then something changed. I always felt scared that I didn't belong somewhere, or that I wasn't taken serious, or there was always something in my mind that made me small. And when the book came out and I got all this positive feedback, it really changed the way I looked at myself. I didn't feel scared anymore. I wasn't scared. It was if something changed in me, and that was the most important thing that I tell to people when people ask me, Dave, why did you do it? And I explain them, I didn't dare to do it, but when I did it, I found out that what I was scared for wasn't realistic, and I just want to show the whole world, just don't be scared to be yourself. What you have done, what happened in your life, please be yourself, and other people who are themselves will find you, and then life will really change. And that's the most beautiful message that I can give. And since Marika and I started this endeavor together of advocating to be ourselves, I lost my anxiety, I lost my fear of being myself, and now I really love being myself, and I'm advocating to the whole world, be yourself, don't be scared of yourself, because yourself is beautiful in all its ways.
That's beautiful. I'm going to say, I had a tragedy happen to me years ago, and I did some self-publishing myself, and I will say, after writing these books and looking back on what I did, it was almost as though I didn't do it. It was therapy for me. it got me through a lot of hard times. But I don't know if you believe in God, but I'll tell you, God has a purpose for many people. And
yes.
He has a purpose for you, because you and Marika don't know it, but you are the voices for the unheard. And that's why your book, The Unknown, is even the name of it, because there's so many people, and that's why Samson, thank you for that therapy, he's able to get something out that's been in him for a long time. And he's not the only one. There are millions and thousands behind those prison walls who want that opportunity to be able to be heard. And their voices are coming from you in that book. There's a reason for you and Marika.
Thanks, Leona, because I believe that too. And Marika and I, we speak about it a lot. I mean, when we talk to each other, when we call each other during the day, and we constantly say to each other, this has to be like this. It's the universe. It's God moving in mysterious ways, and we don't have to understand his ways. We just have to move and have to do and keep thinking of the love that we are spreading. And sometimes it sounds corny, but it isn't corny. It's really God, because I really believe in God, Leona. And I was lost for a very, very long time. And since I found my way back to God, everything changed for the better.
The
so,
prodigal son. The prodigal son.
Yeah. Yeah.
The prodigal.
I'm going to say something else, too. A lot of people don't realize it, but a Bible fits in the palm of somebody's hand. But the whole truth, everything about it is not in that hand. So there's so many mysteries in the Bible, and there's so many mysteries that are now coming to pass, even to this day. And it says in the final seconds of the last days, everything's going to be revealed. There's a purpose. Just like in the Old Testament, when it talks about an eye for an eye, but yet in the New Testament, when the Christ died, it talks, you know, look at Moses, King David, and even Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, all murderers. Saul killed so many Christians, executed them. So that's why I say there's a purpose, and God has a reason for you and Marie coming on the show, and he has a reason for that book that's written, and he has a reason for the message that you are giving. And I want the audience to realize this. There's a message that everybody needs to hear. And buying the book, getting involved in the book, and learning about what's going on in this country and around the world is very important to us.
Thank you, Leona. Amen to that.
And I want to say one last thing. They talk about UFOs. Do you know UFOs, over 500 sightings in the United States or in the country, in the world, and yet in the book of Ezekiel, in the Bible, chapter 1 of Ezekiel is talking about UFOs. You know, in Genesis, when it's talking about the floods, never will the world be destroyed by floods. It will be destroyed by fire. Look at what's happening now in Hawaii, in Canada, in California, and nuclear weapons, and even your countries right now with the threat of nuclear weapons with Ukraine and Russia and all these countries taking sides. We have to wake up to what's going on in the world. So when messages like yours are given on a radio show and or in a book, people need to take heed and try to get that information, get that knowledge and that experience that you're sharing. And I thank you so much again for coming on the show to talk about it. And I know I've kept you over time, and I know in your country right now it's nighttime, but I enjoy having you on, and I still want to thank you for coming on, both of you. And we have about 5 minutes left, so if you would like to let the audience know. And another thing, I don't know if you have a website, but if you don't, you should put a website on, put your book on the website, and hopefully get the book sold even through the website, because people are going to be checking it out.
We have a website.
Can you give that information once again? Because I probably didn't hear it the first time, or maybe didn't say it the first time, but if you can, let the audience know how they can get in contact with you and Dave, and also how they can see the book, where they can find the book to buy it. And hopefully you'll be coming back on again to talk more, because we enjoy having you.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Dave, do me.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Marika.
Well, the website is www.marikacoaching.com. No, it's .nl. And you can have, there is a English flag on it. And if you click on the English flag, translation of the complete text is over there of the website, and there will be a tab with the book Unknown the moment it is translated and transformed into an EPUB, and then to be bought on Amazon. So it's not yet in English on the website, but you can just check it out a little bit about reading who I am, and Dave is his website. He probably will tell himself.
Okay, Marie, can you repeat that? www.
M-A-R-Y. K-E-I-G-H. And then coaching behind it. So Mary Kay Coaching.
www.marykcoaching.nl. N-L. Great. www.marykcoaching.nl. Okay.
Indeed. And then just click on the English flag and you can read the text of the complete website in English. That's my my company. I'm an entrepreneur, and the book in Dutch is on the first tab of the website. You can order it there, but I don't think people that are from America will buy a Dutch book, but yeah, you never know. There are people that are from the Netherlands, aren't we, on the show, Carla?
Yeah.
You
know what, though? There are, look at, we're in the United States of America. These are representatives from every country in the world, so I'm sure there's a lot of Dutch people that live in the United States as well.
Yeah, well, so it's a small world. It's a small world.
Now, on your website, do you have a place where if people want to connect with you, a place on the website they can actually write to you or leave messages or whatever?
Where it is contact, just contact. There's a form and they can fill it in and it will come into my email account directly.
Okay. Great. And Dave, do you have anything to say, or do you want to share anything?
Well, I can share anything for the few minutes that we still got. I do have a website. We have a company also, the same as Marika. I do a coaching. I am an entrepreneur also. The name of my website is www.aware4youth. And then it's not four, F-O-R, but it's the number four. So it's, the number, so awareforyouth.nl. And we also have a contact form, so you can get in contact. I don't have a nice flag in the top, so it translates to English, but I do hope that when you use Chrome or anything, internet is so good nowadays that when you come to a foreign page and you click on translate, then it translates itself most of the time. I have a fairly simple website, but I have a contact form also. So if people would like to contact, I'll get it directly in my mail 24 hours a day. I will get it on my phone. So if people like to call out or do something, then please do. I'm available for that. So I just want to thank Carla. It was nice to hear you speaking Dutch after such a long time. I love it when you stay in America or live in America for so long, and then the Dutch sounds always really like Barry Stevens. That's also a famous guy in the Netherlands, and he comes from America, Barry Stevens. Well, and I really had a great time, Leona, today. I really enjoy our Tuesday. So the Tuesday for me is now like a steady thing that every Tuesday I'm looking forward to have these conversations online with people that are from all over the place. And I enjoyed even last week with Kyle and this week with Samson, and together with Marika, we really enjoy this. I can say this for Marika too, that we really enjoy it. So we talk about it a lot, and yeah.
So you don't mind coming back on a weekly basis, or maybe every other week, or maybe once a month?
We block every week already.
Yeah, we blocked every week already. So.
Oh, great. Okay. I was afraid that you were going to find it to be too much, but this is great. I'll tell you, you both have so much to share, and I am so thankful that you're coming on, because when Franz first told me about you, I had a good feeling then, and I believe we still have a good feeling with you coming on. So we will see. We will have Dave and Marieke on with us again then next Tuesday at 2 o'clock Eastern time, and it will be 8 o'clock your time.
Yes, definitely. Looking forward to it again.
So please, everyone, join us next Tuesday as we have Marieke and Dave on, and it'll be 2 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and 8 o'clock Amsterdam Time. And again, I want to thank you both for coming on. I look forward to you being on next week, and you are going to be a blessing. I know you are going to be a blessing, and I thank Franz for introducing us. And we will be looking forward to having you on next week. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Leona. Thank you very much.
Audience, we're going to be closing now. We're going to be closing now, and our guests will be back with us next week. Please join us. Call in. Feel free to leave a message or just listen to the good things that are being told and the informative. We are bringing awareness, and I hope everyone is benefiting from it. Thank you so much, Dave and Marieke. I thank you for coming on, and we are now going to end this episode. And I want to thank my friend Carla for also joining us. We are going to be ending this episode.